I grew up in Ontario and had a very normal middle-class lifestyle. And I started university in economics and ended up with a philosophy degree. And it was in the middle of school that I guess I decided that I would go and start to make the world a better place, I guess. But I didn't feel that Ontario was the place for me, so I sort of packed up when I finished school and moved out here. Shortly after moving here, I started attending a group called Hempology 101 in Vancouver, the idea being to legalize cannabis by educating people about it and about the law and where the problems from prohibition really, you know, come to society. So I moved to Victoria a few months after going to my first meeting and decided that I would start having these meetings at the university and otherwise to educate people. And it was during that time that I read a lot of information about the medical uses of cannabis. I heard a lot about the Cannabis Buyers Club in San Francisco that Dennis Perron had started up down there, and was meeting people here in Victoria. In particular, I met a woman who made cookies and salve for the skin, and I'd never seen anything like those kinds of products before. And I was quite intrigued by them, and I learned about the use of it, especially eating with people with AIDS and how it helps their appetite. And it was the combination of those experiences that after a few months led me to believe that we shouldn't be waiting for our government to make changes and distribute cannabis, that the need was great, that the supply was potentially great, and that what we needed was an interim step where people were supplied cannabis while the laws were being changed.
So you started a cannabis buyers club in Victoria?
In January of 96. It's the first and oldest club in the country that's been providing cannabis. We didn't have a mandate from California or anywhere else, so we decided to stick with what is people with permanent disabilities or diseases. Incurable is another word for it. We don't help people with mental health issues unless they have a recommendation from a doctor. But basically, for most physical permanent ailments, we sign people up with a diagnosis, not a recommendation. And that's been a big issue, I guess. But certainly, our mandate has been confirmed now, even though it's 8 years old, by the courts and the Senate committee that recommended it to be legalized, actually. But most citizens, including Health Canada now, recognize that these people that are permanently disabled have a necessity to drugs, and cannabis is a good option for them.
So the people you serve in your club are not necessarily restricted to those who have been granted the permission of the government to smoke marijuana for medicinal purposes?
In fact, they all could apply to Health Canada. They all fit the mandate, but they haven't got the paperwork filled out. We don't require that people, you know, do that. A lot of doctors don't want to sign the forms.
Do you encourage people to do that?
Yeah, we hand out copies of the new forms here, and certainly the more protection people have, the better. We would like to have all of our members with legal protection, but the information that Health Canada receives can be disclosed to the police, or in the past, other sources have somehow got the information as well, and people are quite wary of giving information to you know, Health Canada when there doesn't seem to be per se much benefit.
Okay, so you're doing your Hempology 101 stuff, and you're operating your Cannabis Buyers Club since 1996, and I'm guessing that it went along without any serious legal trouble for a while.
Yeah, it was really about 5 years before we started to get bothered. The Buyers Club was working out of an apartment, and we had or have meetings at the University of Victoria, as well as Wednesday night meetings downtown. The first real occasion where the police interfered with us was at the University of Victoria. They sent some undercover officers to pretend to take a toke and collect a roach and arrest me in the parking lot later and charge me with trafficking, actually.
And that's just one of the Well, like you're up on a number of charges that stem from, like, is it four or five different incidents?
I've been arrested four times so far here.
Okay, so I guess the first one being University of Victoria.
Yep.
Could you tell us briefly about the other three times?
1 week later was their annual pot cookie giveaway, and they caught me with the cookies as I was going to that and charged me again with trafficking. So I argued what's called a constitutional question at the time, where I have several sections of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms that I'm using to beat the law. And because of that, there's been a delay for many years. In the meantime, I've been arrested at two of the raids at the Cannabis Buyers Club for selling medical marijuana, which makes it, I think, a total of six trafficking charges from those four incidents that I'm facing. And we've just started now to negotiate which trial is going to occur first. And otherwise, I go to court now on May the 26th is my first trial. And in fact, it's funny enough, for the third time I was arrested, which is the first raid at the Buyers Club, which is in some ways the court case that we're looking forward to going to the most. Police, in fact, told me to get a store 3 years ago.
Well, you were in court earlier this month.
Yep.
And what was that about? That was something to do with the constitutional issues involved in your arrests. And how did that go for you?
Well, it's been a chess game legally. It's sort of complicated. But the delay that we argued for 3 years ago was for the Supreme Court of Canada to deal with the possession law, because my charge of being for sharing joints started with simple possession. And so when we started to go to court here in January, the initial idea was to have my university arrest occur, or trial occur first, and because that's the one we've waited for so long, and then the other three trials would happen right after them, and that my constitutional questions would be for the most part dealt with at my first trial. And then what happened after that was kind of funny. The cookie trial got put back because one of the officers from the raid at the club is pregnant, and so they bumped that trial ahead because they wanted her to appear as a witness before her maternity leave. And so when we set a trial date for the university trial, sorry, I keep using that word, but we didn't allot enough time. And when we went to our last pre-trial hearing, we were able to get a delay, and now the trial that I was supposed to start yesterday for the university arrest isn't until the end of September, actually. It's ironically the last of my four trials now.
Are you gonna have grounds to argue that you're not getting a speedy trial? Or
I waived those.
Okay.
Yeah, I waived that a long time ago. And in some ways, the way that I was arrested at the university is what you might call constitutionally the most grossly disproportionate use of the law that I plan on proving in court here.
Well, because not only are you charged with trafficking, whereas when you were in a group of mm-hmm. people who were doing the same thing.
Exactly.
But what's actually remarkable in that whole story is that when you pass a joint to somebody, that's considered trafficking in marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just, it's something that I was reminded of just recently when we were, when we heard about Mark Emery's
exactly.
arrest. So it's the same kind of, that's insane.
It's, well, technically the word you can use is grossly disproportionate. That's what the Supreme Court of Canada is going to consider.
So what actually got decided earlier this month then? I'm still not too clear on that.
Okay, well, the last decision was really about the order of the trials.
Oh, I see. Okay. So now you've got that sorted out. What are you hoping for the outcome of these various trials? I guess I should ask you in each separate case.
Okay, well, the two with the club, the Buyers Club, that is, we certainly anticipate that the law will be struck down as unconstitutional in these circumstances. All of the raids that occurred at the Buyers Club were the result of a member doing something stupid, basically. We were never caught selling for non-medical purposes or to people that didn't have the proper documentation or for anything else. And so, again, the police, as I mentioned, even told me to go into a store 3 years ago in the first place.
So to get out of the apartment you were in,
yeah,
and get a storefront.
Yeah, and then 9 months later, somebody that I actually had cut off because I caught him reselling pot from the club, that per se idiot, brought the police in here 2 days after to have us shut down out of vengeance. And when the police officer first came in the club, I was able to convince him that he shouldn't press charges that day, because what we were doing was not criminal. It might be illegal, but it wasn't wrong.
Geez, how did you do that?
It was quite a dance. I tell people I know Jedi mind tricks.
I guess so. But seriously, how did you do that?
Well, we were very honest and open with him about everything that we were doing. We, you know, showed him the facilities. We were, in fact, you know, quite proud to show him what we had been doing over this time. He, you know, and it's quite obvious in the police report that he was quite amazed at both the level of honesty and intelligence that was displayed here. Certainly, the police department, when he called to the station and asked them what to do, they were unclear about the process that should be going on, because they thought it was legal.
What are the actual charges?
Trafficking. Possession for the purpose of trafficking.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think those ones are just possession. They didn't charge me with trafficking because they didn't, per se, you know, catch anyone that I'd sold to.
But but probably, I'm guessing, being a buyer's club, you would have had a fair amount.
Yeah, they got about $8,000 or $9,000 worth of pot.
Jeez.
And so, yeah, that was a bit of a setback, for sure. In fact, they've probably stolen about $35,000 in pot and cash over time.
So
a few mistakes, having too much in the club, that's for sure.
So the next, I guess the next one is the pot cookie giveaway. Is that the next trial?
Yeah, and that one there is going to be really interesting as well, in terms of, the grossly disproportionate nature of the law. Because the simple passing of a cookie is a mutually beneficial, consensual act, right? Like, there's no victim here. Everybody that's, you know, eating the cookie is taking it of their own free will and accord, and it's benefiting them. It's not hurting them, if it's in a cookie especially. So the constitutional issues that I'm bringing up at that trial are around, again, the idea that sharing cannabis in any form, being charged with trafficking, is irrational. And secondly, that when cannabis is cooked and made into an edible product, it is, in fact, much less potentially harmful than any smoked form of the herb, and should be classified, if it should be illegal at all, it should be classified as a separate drug in the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act. And so the punishment associated with possessing cannabis that's in a cookie should be much, much less than punishment for having the raw herb, if there should be punishment at all.
So for those of us out east who maybe haven't heard of the reason for the pot cookie giveaway, do you mind just filling us in a little bit about what that event's all about?
Okay, well, we do it on International Medical Marijuana Day, which is November the 15th.
Right.
And I came up with the idea in 99 as an attempt to, per se, get the word out about the medical benefits of eating cannabis. And when I did it at the library downtown, the police showed up, because it was in the paper, and watched me give out the cookies. And when they were interviewed by the media, they said that when marijuana is cooked, it's somehow neutralized, and they can't analyze it anymore. And that was why they let me get away with it.
Is that true?
No.
Okay.
And so, you know, it was just their excuse for not arresting me, because I think they knew it would look embarrassing if they did it. But I guess the next year they realized that I was just going to keep doing it, and otherwise decided to come and arrest me. And really, it was no more than when I got out of the car, there was a cop there on a bike looking for me right away, and he saw one of the cookie containers open up enough that he could see cookies inside, and that was enough for him to grab me and arrest me before I could do anything.
We know what the issues are. I'm wondering what you think your chances of getting through all of these things successfully are. Like, are you optimistic, or?
Well, it's already been a success. Certainly, with even every time I've been arrested, it's not only brought more attention to this law and how irrational it is, but it's brought more support to me and the groups that I'm working with. for example, all five raids at the Buyers Club, pretty much, you know, more members would come in, more growers would come in, because they could see us standing up, you know, for a good thing, and they wanted to support us with that or join us. And they almost never heard of us before we started to get arrested. Certainly in court, I've won at every single time I've gone. Despite the fact that with all my work at Hempology and the Buyers Club, there's now been 11 different times, not counting the growers, there's been 11 times at a meeting or in this store where someone's been arrested. There's not a single conviction from any one of those times, and that some trials are certainly coming up now. But with the raids at the Buyers Club, certainly with other court decisions, especially the one that, you know, you would have heard of at the Toronto Compassion Club last fall on October the 7th, and everything else that's gone down in court, you know, we're looking forward to going and explaining ourselves. We don't expect any convictions to stand from that. And in some ways, if I'm going to be punished, if the law does stand up somehow to the Supreme Court here after years of appeal, because this is the whole thing, is that, like, you know, I'll have many options to appeal. I'm just doing all these at the lowest level of court so far. So it could be, you know, a long time coming before I end up with a final absolute conviction on any of these charges. And by the time that happens, I think society will have moved even further to the point where it's irrational to throw anybody in jail that's using or possessing cannabis unless they're, you know, doing all sorts of other criminal activities at the same time.
Which would be against the law.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess one last quick question would be, you're probably aware of Mark Emery's support.
Definitely.
Of the NDP, and I'm wondering, because I know you have an active marijuana party in BC, what do you think of all that?
Okay, well, I was always supportive of the Federal Marijuana Party because they had the pot-only platform. I had a problem, per se, with Mark and the BC Marijuana Party when they picked up a whole extra agenda with the last election. You might not have heard of it, but it was pretty right-wing, and none of us in the pot movement wanted much to do with it. And so the BC Marijuana Party doesn't always have the best name out here that it could. And the idea that the NDP is saying everything that the Marijuana Party was and more, to me, just means that there's absolutely no reason to support the Marijuana Party or the Green Party, even, for that matter, that the NDP is the only real option we have for an official opposition. And maybe in the election after, we'd get to see Jack up there as PM. I don't know if he can do it in this next one, but certainly we don't have any other hope but the NDP government in this country. I just, you know, the courts certainly, you know, are keeping it going. That's what's allowed for people like me to stay free, and Mark Emery as well. You know, certainly if he would have been arrested under those circumstances in the States, he'd still be in jail too. So, you know, something has to happen. Hopefully the Democrats will get in there too. But the NDP, I've been heavily promoting in our new Cannabis Digest magazine, and otherwise, you know, we really need to get them elected, there's no doubt.